Yeah, Daniel, I like it. Rolling in, and it's nice and smooth. I feel like we should be talking very smooth tonight, like doing like a radio show of smooth jazz or something. Suave. Rico Suave. Was that a song back in the day?
I think it was a person. Wasn't it?
Was it a person too?
Was it not?
I'm not too sure.
Chang.
I just know that the Rico line. That's all.
Rico Suave. Yeah. Hey guys, know what? If you're listening right now, you're not listening to Rico Suave or Smooth Jazz Line. You're listening to Apologetics.com Radio, and we're live right here from Glendale, California, in the studio of KKLA. And I actually just want to say a special thank you to all of you who are listening, and you guys make this show what it is. And we've been on the air for, gosh, I think 21 years. And you guys are the ones that lead the way in that. And you guys show us that there's a need for this show continually and give us the opportunity by donating to us. And we're so grateful for that. And if you do want to give us a tax deductible donation, make sure you go to apologetics.com, click on the donate button, and you can submit your donations there. Again, it is tax deductible. And you guys keep us on the air, so we're so appreciative, and I just want to say thank you to you guys. Also, you guys really do make the show in that, like, it's fantastic to sit here and talk amongst the three of us or two of us or whoever's in the studio, but what we really, really love, and the reason why I at least really do the show, is so that we can answer your questions, because I remember what it was like being on the other side. I remember what it was like listening to talk radio, and actually from this studio, I remember listening to Frank Pastore when Frank Pastore was still alive, and he broadcast from this chair I'm sitting in, which is really surreal. And I used to call in as I was converting from atheism to Christianity. So we want to make sure that we give you that opportunity. And you don't need to be a Christian to call us. If you have any questions that you're struggling with about the Christian worldview, give us a call. And you can do that by dialing 888-995-5552. 888-995-KKLA. And we would love to take those questions. And by we, I mean us three tonight in studio. I'm John Noyes. I'm your host, but I've got two co-hosts here. And we have Eric Horn, who you guys are used to.
Good evening, everybody.
That's Eric. He's a beautiful man. And we have Chang Yan.
Good to be here.
Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yan. Yeah.
Yan.
Yeah.
I did it.
Fantastic.
Nice job. See, there is a God in heaven.
Yes.
I heard that's right. No, and Chang is a good friend who you've been on once or twice before.
I want to say at least once, yeah. Maybe twice. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and you are just, I love having you on. I'm really excited for tonight because you're just a breadth of knowledge. Super smart guy who loves the Lord. You bring a different flavor, and I think that we're gonna get into that tonight as we talk about our subject. But the first subject, guys, I'm just letting you know, I'm drinking some lemon. What is this? Lemon. I love lemon tea.
Right, you went off the lemon lift today.
I was gonna have the lemon lift, and I just wasn't feeling it.
I
wasn't feeling it, so I got the I love lemon, and
not lemon.
It's I love lemon.
Okay,
so it's like
super lemon.
Yeah, it's for the lemon lover.
Why is it always about you?
Well, because the universe is all about me, obviously. No, it's not. It's not. I feel bad even saying that. I'm so sorry for saying that. Will you guys forgive me?
I forgive you.
Will you forgive me?
Yes.
All right. Wow. I feel like we had a breakthrough. I feel closer to you guys somehow. Let me take a sip of my lemon lift tea. So what do you guys want to talk about tonight?
We'll see. Greg Kokel had a talk, a couple weeks ago? Week ago?
A week ago, yeah.
We've been part of the Get a Grip series?
Yeah, at Living Oaks Church. So Living Oaks Church is a church out in Newbury Pack, and every year they have done a apologetics conference. And what it is they bring in anywhere between 4 and 6 speakers to speak on Wednesday evenings. And this year they spread it out over 6 months. And this was the last one. So we had an incredible cast in over the last 6 months there. We had Abdu Murray. He broke the ice for us. Do you know who Abdu Murray is, Chang?
No.
He's with RZIM.
Okay.
He did such a great job.
Dude, you would love him. Like, absolutely love him. He wrote a book.
Is he the guy that does Islam?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I've heard of him.
Former Muslim. He's ginormous. Okay. Went to Michigan Law. Super smart guy. Just a really great man. Like, he's so nice. He's so humble.
Okay.
Obviously very intelligent, but also winsome in his apologetic. Obviously cares about the people he's speaking to, which is really important.
Okay.
So We had him, and then we had Douglas Axe. Do you know him, Chang?
No, I don't.
Chang, man.
I've been out of it.
I feel bad for Chang because I contacted Chang like yesterday and was like, hey, you want to be on the radio? And I didn't send them anything. So we had Doug Axe, and he spoke on intelligent design in his book, Undeniable, which is phenomenal. And then after that, we had
Clay Jones.
Oh my goodness. Clay Jones, who's one of my mentors. And he spoke on The Problem of Evil. And I love Clay's presentation on that. If you're listening and you haven't seen that, all these actually you can see at apologetics.com's Facebook page. I think they're still up.
Yeah. So these are like hour and a half, hour and 15 minute kind of talks.
Including the Q&A.
The talks I think were really good.
The talks were phenomenal.
But the Q&A...
Yeah.
It was really good.
I love anytime speakers. Actually, as a speaker, a Q&A for me is my favorite time. Like, I would so much rather just go and do Q&A than present on a topic. Next month, I'm going up to Hume Lake Christian Camps, and I'm presenting on a few different topics, Problem of Evil being one of them, the existence of truth. And then we do a Q&A. And every summer I go up there, I'm in a breakout session and the place is packed. I mean, literally, kids are sitting in the aisles. It's like 300 or 400 kids that are sitting there to see. And the best one is always the Q&A.
You like the ones where they come up to the mic or the questions are turned in? Sometimes when they come up to the mic, it could get contentious. And
I prefer that. Okay. Knowing who I'm talking to.
And we had a little bit of that. With Doug Axe. Right?
With Doug Axe,
We had a guy show up who didn't agree with all of what Doug was saying.
We had a paleontologist from one of the UCs or one of the, like, yeah, UCs, Cal State or whatever.
I don't know.
And he came with some students, which is cool that he brought him, you know. But then he started, like, yelling at Doug Axe from the back. So I had to put him in a full Nelson. No, I didn't have to do that. But that would have been funny, right? But no, he started yelling back and forth. And it wasn't mean-spirited, but the question was asked, the mic was gone, and he wanted to follow up. So they had a little bit of a dialogue.
That's good.
Which is really good. Then that's what I really like to see is that open dialogue. So we had Doug Axe, and then we had...
Clay Jones,
and then we had...
Mr. McDowell.
Oh, my goodness. This guy, he's up and coming. His name's Sean McDowell. Have you guys ever heard of Sean McDowell?
Josh McDowell.
Sean McDowell.
So they're related.
It's his dad.
Yeah.
Sean is like...
Josh McDowell wrote the new evidence that deserves a verdict.
With his son, Sean. Get a Grip?
No, he wrote the original book.
He wrote the original, but updated...
And then they came with an updated one.
The new evidence that demands a verdict, is a lot of that work was done by Sean.
Yeah, I bought that book. I bought that book when I was just becoming to be a Christian, and I couldn't read it at all because it's outline form.
Yeah, it's like a text.
So this talk actually had me bring it back, and I actually went through it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what a wealth of information!
This is amazing.
Because you can actually put it together once you have the context. Anyway,
so I had that book too. When I was in high school.
Yeah,
the very first, one of the first apologetics books. And I gave it to my history teacher at the time.
Was he a believer?
No, he was an atheist. He was a European history teacher.
Nice.
And I gave it to him and asked him to read it. And then he gave it back to him. He gave it back to me and said, that's his evidence.
Oh my god! So it's subjective now, right? That's really,
so
really funny.
Oh, that's his evidence.
That's super funny. Good for you for giving it to him, Chang. Wow. That's amazing.
He was like, does it demand a verdict? That's his evidence.
Yeah, that's his evidence. That's his verdict. And anyways, so Sean, you know Sean, his son, Sean McDowell, who's like... In my opinion, he's one of the best Christian apologists out there. He's just one of the best guys I know. He's amazing. And if you guys listen, if you've never heard of Sean McDowell, you should really Google him. SeanMcDowell.com. And he is he's doing some amazing stuff. His newest book he just wrote with J. Warner Wallace is unbelievable. And it's So the Next Generation Will Know, I think is the title. Mm. I just read it maybe 2 months ago. And... it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal great resource for you parents out there that have some students that are struggling or even just students that are thriving. It's great to read and talks about the next generation and really where they're at. I learned a ton. So then it was Sean McDowell.
Mike Adams.
Mike. Oh my gosh. Mike Adams.
Freedom.
Yeah. he writes for the Daily Beast. No. Yeah. Daily Beast.
Town Hall too, right?
And Town Hall, but not much for Town Hall anymore in the Daily Beast. So that's like Ben Shapiro land. And he was unbelievable. Like he was just so good. I don't think anybody really knew who he was until he came and spoke at that from the church. At least people had to like Google him. And he gave a presentation on the three threats to campus liberty.
Right.
And he opened my eyes to a lot of stuff, and he was just really funny. No notes when he spoke. One of the things I really appreciate about all these guys is they start and stop exactly on time. They know what they're saying. They know how long it takes to say it. And he had great points. And we talked about that maybe 2 months ago or a month ago, I guess. And then Greg Kokel.
Right.
And that's where we are now. So Greg Kokel presented last Wednesday, a week ago Wednesday. And he presented on Tactics, which is a book that he wrote, and he's actually coming out with an updated version. And everybody here has read Tactics. I mean, I think I read it maybe 4 years ago. Yeah. But it's over 10 years old now, and I just really appreciated Greg's approach and what he had to say, you know, about how to present, just the Christian message, you know, and how to defend the faith out in the public realm, you know, to present the ideas and have a place at the table of the conversation, I guess.
He wrote another book, The Story of Reality, right? And I thought that's probably the best book I've read on Christian stuff.
Worldview stuff. Have you read that, Chang?
No, I haven't.
His newest book?
It's really so. I mean, I don't know that. I mean, someone who's very familiar with Christianity and apologetics probably won't get a whole lot out of it. But the way that he lays out the story of Christianity and things. Anyway, he's an excellent author. He wrote this Tactics book and then also The Story of Reality. I just can't recommend that book enough.
Yeah. Story of Reality is phenomenal. And actually we went through that book on this show for, I think we did it for 4 or 5 months. Steven and I, who we miss. Steven's not here. He died.
He didn't die.
He didn't die.
He's too nice to die.
He's awesome. He's too nice to die. Yeah, he's awesome, but he's gone. But we have Chang.
He kind of looks like Steve.
Kind of. Well, no.
A little bit.
A little bit? I don't know. I need a picture of Steve. I should go on Facebook right now and check it out. No, I don't even know what we're talking about. We've lost everybody.
We're off the rails.
We're off the rails. This is unbelievable. Daniel, help us. We need help. No. So we're going to talk about, we're going to dig into some tactics tonight. And Chang, I just like to not even, so Chang doesn't have the privilege of seeing the presentation. He read the book a couple years ago. But
several years ago.
Several years ago.
A long time ago. Yeah.
But you are somebody that I would see as sharing your faith with people. You take your faith seriously. You go to a phenomenal church. I met you through a phenomenal young man, Andrew, who used to host a show with me, actually.
Yes. We were on together.
Yeah. And when you're out and about, like how do you get in the conversations with people?
You know, I actually apply a lot of the tactics that Greg teaches in his book. I mean, the book is, I think it's based on a lot the talks that he has done before in the past. About the tactics in defending the faith. And when I was young and listening to his tactic, especially the Colombo tactic.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. That was so applicable to me as a young believer. I didn't have to just simply go on the offensive, but then simply, you know, ask questions and try to understand the other side.
Yeah.
And it was just very eye-opening and very applicable at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, even today, that's where I began actually, by asking the questions.
Yeah,
yeah,
I love those questions he does. So Greg in his book, he lists out a ton of different tactics: diplomacy or D-Day, reservations, getting in the driver's seat, which is the start of Columbo, and then he goes to Columbo step two, where he the burden of proof doesn't let people or shifts the burden of proof, you know, from yourself to the person you're talking to. And then he spends a lot of time on suicide, views that self-destruct, practical suicide, sibling rivalry or infanticide, views that, yeah, just like can't coexist together. Taking the Roof Off, which is a great one. Steamroller, where he discusses, this is something that I'm presented with all the time, where you're talking to somebody and they're just a steamroller, meaning they just roll right over you and they don't really stop to listen. And then Road Scholar, Just the Facts, Ma'am, and More Sweat, Less Blood. And those are the tactics. Those are the chapters, at least. But the one that I think is most impressive is what you mentioned, Chang, is the Columbo tactic.
Yeah, and anyone could do it. You don't have to be a theologian or, you know.
Yeah.
You could just.
It's a topic is what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, the tactic-wise, like, it's almost, you know, you're trying to ask questions and try to understand what the other side is saying. And then leading them to understand the Christian perspective. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's only really effective, though, if you actually want to understand. Like there's nothing here in the tactics books where it's just a magic way to win an argument. Right?
That's not the point. Right. The point isn't to win an argument. The point is to get to know somebody and then hopefully, well, Greg would say, to have the opportunity to put a stone in somebody's shoe. You know, it's not even conversion. And he makes a big deal about that in the book and in his presentation. Like, we're not to be concerned with conversion. That's not – we can't do that.
Right? I really like that. He said that in the talk, that his goal is never to win someone to Christ. It's always to inform or understand.
Yeah, he related it to there's some people who are harvesters and then – but we're gardeners.
Gardeners and harvesters, yeah.
Gardeners and harvesters. And oftentimes we feel the pressure of being a harvester, meaning we put pressure on ourselves to lead people to the Lord. And when that doesn't happen, we get frustrated. And that ends up with a sour Christian, right. You know, who doesn't want to share their faith. But if you take the pressure off of yourself and you say, hey, listen, I'm just I'm a gardener. You know, I'm going to plant some seeds. I'm going to water them. And if somebody else gets to reap the benefit, gets the fruit, fantastic. It doesn't matter. We're on the same team. And I loved Greg about that, like when he says that kind of stuff. And that's really what this tactic, Columbo, is all about. It's not about winning somebody to Christ necessarily. It's about putting a stone in somebody's shoe. And in the process, it's just having a good old conversation with somebody, getting to know somebody and what they think by asking questions, you know. And do you have the questions in front of you? Do you know what they are? I'm testing Eric.
Yeah, I don't have the questions in front of me, but it's how did you come to that conclusion? What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
What's the other one?
Can you clarify?
Can you clarify? Yes, yeah. Can you clarify for me?
So it's not the questions, the strict questions, right? So what do you mean by that is a clarifying question.
Right, but you're not going to always employ it as quote unquote what do you mean by that?
Can you give me an example?
What do you mean by that?
Well, what do you mean by an example?
Yeah. So what's your definition of example, John?
Yeah.
How would you define an example?
Exactly. That's how you'd employ the question.
Like for example, the problem of evil. If God is, you know, good, then why does he allow evil in the world, right? And one of the questions, so what do you mean by evil? Can you explain what you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's important because you want to make sure you're playing on the same field.
And it's not a trick question either. I want to keep reemphasizing that because I think some people, there's potential to use a lot of this for not the best purposes, maybe even abuse it by accident. But we're not asking, you know, what do you mean by evil as a way to delay the conversation or to extend it or to kind of trip somebody up. I think at least when I ask the question, I really want to know what does he mean? Because what does evil mean outside the context of God?
Yeah. So the reason for the tactic is to guide the conversation, to stay in the driver's seat. So you don't feel the pressure of not just the conversion, but also having the answer. Oftentimes as a Christian, I know this, I feel the weight of having to answer every question somebody puts at me. And in the process there, two things happen. One is my mind races and I lose my thoughts, and sometimes I don't have the answers. Two, I lose the perspective that I'm talking to a soul, like I'm talking to a person. Yeah. And that's what I love about this tactic is, well, through these questions, you know, what do you mean by that? How'd you come to that conclusion? Specifically, you're getting to know somebody a little bit better, whether it be somebody that's sitting in the plane seat next to you, or whether it's somebody, a store clerk, that, like Greg has a great example in the book, The Witch of Wisconsin.
Right. Right.
And Greg just walks into the store, and this is how he tells in the book. It's a photo mat. And now, and he makes the joke, you know, nobody knows what photo mats are anymore because they don't exist because everything's digital. But you, he walked in to drop some film off or whatnot, and the girl behind the counter was wearing a pentagram. Mm-hmm. So this is his example of what do you mean by that is, does that necklace have any religious significance or is it just jewelry? You know, so some people just wear the cross and it's just it's an add-on. It's like what they choose out of the jewelry box. But some people wear a cross because it has meaning to them.
Right.
And so that's his what do you mean by that, right? You're wearing a pentagram. She admitted full-fledged that she's a pagan and she was a witch. She was Wiccan. And it went into a great conversation that he had with her. And that's all in the book, Tactics.
But the conversation didn't really go anywhere, right? I mean, I think that he ended up talking to her about abortion in this particular example.
Yeah.
And I think he ended up saying, you know, leaving her in a position where she had to think about what she was really saying.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like, you know, he took her to church the next day.
No. Yeah, it didn't have like – it had a natural ending.
Right.
Right? The conversation ran its course, and he dropped his film off and said good day, you know.
Yeah, I remember Greg used to say like sometimes he would, you know, go away and think, I wish I had asked this question.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not like even though you may not have asked, you could learn from that experience and come back the next time and ask that question.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that Greg also does, I just know him personally, now working with him, is he also takes a lot of notes. So like he'll have a conversation with somebody and when he goes back into the car, he's writing down notes for the conversation so he can process it and think it, and also just so he can become more sharp. And that's a great, you know, kind of like a you know, behind the scenes point tactic, I guess, that, you know, if we're having conversations with people, if you're being intentional about this stuff, jot some notes down after the conversation so then you can become more proficient or just more succinct in your conversations and stuff like that. But what do you mean by that is a fantastic example for a number of reasons. One is whenever I use it, I love it because it puts the focus on the person and everybody likes to talk about themselves,
right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's also very comforting and settling for the person you're talking to because they're not having to defend their position. They're just having to describe their position. But it's also fantastic because you're putting the burden of proof initially on them. Like, I'm just going to let you tell me what you think, especially when you're talking about things of God. How many times have you guys been in a conversation with somebody where they say they don't believe in God, and then like 25 minutes later, they go on to define what they mean by God, and it's like, yeah, well, I don't believe in that God either. You know, how can you believe in that sky daddy who torches, you know, that's that malevolent, you know, divine child's, you know, abuser? It's like, whoa, like we got to stop it because I don't think we're talking about the same God, you know, and it's good up front. Just say, hey, well, you know, well, you don't believe in God. Can I ask you, when you say God, what are you thinking of? You know, can you describe the thing that you don't believe in?
And, you know, I work in kind of a technical atmosphere where I work. So I often get asked the question, you know, what do you mean by that? What what's your design going to be? And I can't tell you how many times where I've sat down and tried to explain the design and realized I'm wrong. This design isn't going to work.
And that points to the fact that sometimes sometimes letting people talk about their view helps them come to the logical conclusion that their view is wrong.
Yeah, and it's not a trip up kind of thing. It's let's talk about it. Let's figure out what this means.
I love it. Love it.
Yes.
Absolutely. And do you guys have any examples where you've ever used this in real life?
Well, we just had a conversation on Facebook where someone's saying, you know, what talking about immigration, I think. And talking about love and what it means to take care of people and to love on people. And so what do you mean by that? What do you mean by loving people?
Yeah. Well, when somebody says like, and I hear this all the time, from Christians and non-Christian, like we should be loving towards people. And that's my main question back at people. Well, yeah, I agree. Wait a second. I want to agree with that. But when you say love, could you tell me what you mean?
And a lot of times I found that when people say love in particular, they mean they're talking that you have to accept whatever the person you're loving is doing. Like, yeah. You have to accept what they do.
Yeah.
And that's not always the most loving thing. So we're off the bat.
Oh.
Someone says, you know,
drives
you
me crazy.
You should love this. And we all agree we should love this. But then they mean something different when they say that word.
Why don't you accept me? Why don't you support me? Mm-hmm.
Affirm.
Yeah,
affirm. That's a great word.
So I had a girlfriend way back in the day before I moved to California. And I was an atheist then. And we had the awful thing happen. Her best friend got hit by a police car who was speeding to a chase. So she got hit and her whole body got shattered into a million pieces. So she died. And when we were talking and processing this stuff, and I was really no help for my girlfriend at the time from an atheistic perspective. It was just, what do you think happens to her? I'm like, well, she's gone, you know? And I remember her saying to me, well, the reason that she had for her being her best friend is that no matter what she did, she was accepting of her. And I remember even then as an atheist, me going, that's an awful friend, actually, because they used to do some pretty horrible things together. And it's like, well, a good friend is somebody who does who speaks truth into your life and wants you to do what's best.
Right.
Not just, and that's love. Love is something is when somebody has your best interests in mind.
There's that passage in 1 Corinthians 13 where it says love rejoices in the truth.
That's right.
So it's not somehow detached from the truth, but it actually rejoices in
it. Rejoices in the truth. That's right. And anyways, that's just like a few ways that we've employed this first tactic in Colombo. You know, what do you mean by that? And then when we get back from the break, we're going to talk about the next one. How'd you come to that conclusion? Which is my favorite. Well, they're all my favorite. I love them all. So, hey, guys, if you are listening, you're listening to Apologetics.com Radio, and I'm so appreciative of you. And you can give us a call at 888-995-KKLA. And we'd love to take your questions. And we're going to be back in, I don't know what, like 60 seconds? Yeah, something like that. Cool. See you then. Very smooth tonight. This is a very smooth night. I feel smooth. Feel relaxed.
I feel like I'm on a train.
I feel like you're on a train?
Yeah, I don't know why.
Weird? I've taken a train once. Have you taken a train?
I have.
Where to?
Santa Barbara.
You took a train to Santa Barbara?
Camarillo to Santa Barbara. It was a lot of fun.
That must be fun.
It was just enough train for the kids.
Was it the surf liner?
I think it was.
Yeah. Chang.
Last time I was on a train, we were going to Grand Canyon.
You went to the Grand Canyon?
Yeah.
In the train?
Like, there was a town a little bit of, below. I forget the name of the town, but you ride the train to the Grand Canyon.
No way.
Yeah.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
A little train, a little jazz.
A little jazz, train jazz. I've taken a train from Boston to Chicago. Ooh. For the World Cup in 1994. And it was a big deal because I was in eighth grade about to go into ninth. And I went with my best friend and his oldest sister. So we rode the train like by ourselves to Chicago and went to two World Cup games in Chicago. No, I think maybe one in Chicago. And then we went to one in Massachusetts at Foxborough Stadium. But it was phenomenal. And I love the train. I love it. I think everybody should ride the train.
How long did it take you?
It was like an overnight trip.
Okay.
We left in the afternoon and got there in the afternoon.
It's a bit of a
distance.
Day.
Yeah, and lots of stops. It was a lot of fun. And now my kids like to watch Little House on the Prairie, and that's like all they take is the train.
Yes.
You know, because they didn't have any cars, so they take the train.
No, they didn't.
And okay. Guys, hey, guess what? We're not talking about trains tonight. I mean, I guess we are talking about trains tonight. We're a hot mess tonight, but this is Apologetics.com Radio, and we're just having fun this evening. And if you want to give us a call, if you have any questions about anything we're talking about, trains included, although I don't know that much about trains. I watched a documentary once. We could go on the whole thing on trains again.
Do they have cabooses anymore? I don't think they do.
I'm not a traditional caboose, not that I've seen. But those diesel engines are pretty insane. Did you know they sprinkle sand on the tracks as they go to lessen the friction on the tracks so they can go further?
I didn't know that.
And the efficiency of them is unbelievable. I mean, they are so fuel efficient.
They're all electric.
Are they electric now?
Well, I mean, they're diesel generators that generate electricity that generate that run through motors that
yeah, but they're diesel. In the end,
no. In the end, they're electric.
No, in up front, they're diesel. Yeah, but they burn diesel.
Yes, they burn diesel.
You know, they burn diesel. That's the way I look at it. Like they're these huge diesel trains. I love them. I went to the train.
We're talking about trains tonight.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the history of trains, and transportation. No, but I actually did go to the train museum in, somewhere in Utah, I feel like, or no, Nevada. Outside Carson City, and it was phenomenal. It was absolutely phenomenal. I brought my kids, everything.
Would you share the gospel on a train?
I would share the gospel on a train, and I'd probably use a tactic to do it.
Which one? The second one?
I'd use Columbo, which consists of three questions. What do you mean by that? That's a clarifying question where you can provide, where somebody can, you can allow somebody to provide you with what they believe, so then you can actually accurately characterize and become informed with who you're talking to. And the second question is really fun because the next question is, what is it?
How did you come to that conclusion?
It's been like 20 seconds since I said it. I can't believe you didn't remember that.
There's three. I can't.
Eric, you're killing me. It's three of them, and you just said it. Anyways, okay, fine. Such a disappointment.
I am disappointed.
You're fired.
I quit.
You can't fire me.
You can't. Who are you? You know? So tonight, if you're listening, guys, we're just sitting here. We're messing around and having a good time because an apologetic series just ended. Get a grip. And you heard an ad for it in the space right before this, the break. And that series is now over, but you can watch them all on apologetics.com's Facebook page and go there. Make sure you go there and friend us and like us. And I think you can follow us on Twitter. We just got our Twitter page back for like 10 years. It was like captured. It was like being held hostage by the people in the Twitter sphere. And we won. We won the battle. We won the battle, but not the war in Twitter. But now make sure you go and watch the videos. We had six major apologetics presentations and presenters, and it's really beneficial. And it's totally free to you guys to watch, and just make sure that you guys also know that if you like what we're doing, you can donate to us apologetics.com. You can hop on and on the internet and just click donate, and whether it's $1 or $100, every little bit's really appreciated because you guys are the ones that keep us on the air, and all of us are volunteer, and we just have a good time. We get together and talk about cool stuff, and tonight happens to be the tactics conversation where we just talked about the first tactic in Columbo, where you ask a question if you're engaging somebody, and we used there were a couple different examples thrown around. I've done it on an airplane. I do it every time I'm on an airplane where I actually feel like talking to somebody. I'll ask them about something that they're either wearing or something that they're reading or something that they say in another conversation, where it's effectively asking somebody, what do you mean by that?
I guess it's also important to point out or emphasize that when you're asking those questions, it's not in like an aggressive tone. The thing about Columbo, right, he has this like almost like a passive kind of character, and Greg does such a great job imitating.
Dude, he does such a good job. He puts on his trench coat. Do you know who Columbo is? Do you remember Columbo, Lieutenant Columbo?
I barely remember Columbo.
I didn't watch Columbo growing up, so I'm like right in that space where it was towards the trail end of him being on television. He's a television character ultimately, and then Rihanna watched a lot of like that genre growing up, and I just never did. I was more of a Chia's kind of guy, you know, Sam Malone and MASH. And Ree and I have to go into Greg's presentation, not this time, but one of the first times we saw him present on Columbo. We went home and watched an episode on Netflix, and we were like, wow, this is just bad TV, man. It's just so slow. But the point is that Greg really does a good job of imitating Lieutenant Columbo. He puts on this trench coat, and he's kind of like, Columbo's this really smart detective, but he plays the role of an absent-minded kind of detective guy. He's forgetful.
And you look at him, he's kind of sloppy.
Sloppy, his hair's
a
mess.
He never has a pen, right?
Yeah, he never has a pen. He's got his trench coat. He's always smoking a cigar, and he's always, hey, you know, what do you mean? You know, or can you tell me one thing? You know, one thing, man, one thing's people to death is what Coco says, you know, and that's where we're at, is that one more thing. You know, he'll ask the upfront question. What do you mean by that? He'll get the his perspective. And then the next question in his lineup is, how'd you come to that conclusion? So it's like, if somebody says something about, the universe is only, you know, 150 days old, you know, you're not going to just like agree with that. Like, you're going to say, well, what, 150 days old, that's really short. Like, how, what have you read to support that, or something like that?
But you're not going to get into a conversation if you say you're wrong.
Yeah. You're not going to, and well, you can get into the conversation, but the conversation is going to be different.
It's going to be very different. It's going to be very adversarial.
Yeah. And you're taking on a lot of burden yourself. Right. Like, and then people are going to think you're a jerk.
Well, you're making a claim when you say you're wrong.
Yeah.
You now have to support that. The guy can come back and say, well, what do you mean by that? I guess.
No, I'm not. Yes, you are.
It's actually the third question.
Yeah, well, that is the third question. But that's how you can get out of the hot seat, which hopefully maybe we'll get to tonight. Yeah. But so he asks, you know, how have you come to that conclusion? You know, and I love that question because that's where you get into the meat of stuff. And there's so many times that I've used this in conversation and I've seen the light bulb go off in somebody's mind. Like, I can see it on their face when they realize that their feet are firmly planted in midair, and they're just like, oh, wait a second. Or what they do is very shortly into that conversation, into answering that second question, they realize that they actually haven't ever really looked for answers.
And Greg mentioned that, I think, in the talk. He said, expect two answers, either a response or a complete blank stare.
Yeah. How? Well, because the news told me, or
right.
Because I was watching a YouTube thing, and it's like, oh, okay, well, now I know what I'm, and now you know what you're dealing with in too, as the person engaging in the conversation. Yeah, I love that question. You know, how have you come to that conclusion? And I use it all the time on airplanes. I was talking to somebody about relativism one night, and this person was defending a relativistic stance on morals. Like, I would never have an abortion, but who am I to say what's right or wrong? You know, it's wrong for me, but not necessarily for you. And I was talking to this person in my living room, and very shortly into that, I was asking, well, what do you, like, how do you, when you say that, like, what exactly do you mean when you say, you know, what's right for me is right for me, but not for you? Because you live a life, and I've seen you do this, that seems to indicate you have a good perception and you're a good person and you know right from wrong. So, like, is stealing, for example, right for me and wrong for you? Well, no, that's not. Well, and then how'd you come to that conclusion question comes. Well, why do you believe that? You know, where is that based in? And I loved it when this conversation, because she's sitting in my living room and all of a sudden, bing.
Well, it really makes you think. I mean, because you have to come back and you have to now explain it. And that was what I was saying earlier before the break, is that when you start explaining something, when you start explaining your view, you either have to know it perfectly or you're going to start finding flaws in it as you explain it.
Yeah.
And it really forces the person to sit back and explain it to somebody. And it's not, you know, you don't want to play dumb, right? You're not playing dumb when you're asking the question. You're really interested in how did they come to that conclusion.
Yeah. That's a big thing to keep in mind too, guys. Like, we should keep stressing this, is that it's when you're talking to people, keep remembering that you're talking to a person.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You're answering a person, not just a question. And so when people have these questions, and it's so much easier, like, and I know, because I've been so many times I've just been such a jerk for Jesus, like, where, and my mom actually one time called me out on this. And it was recently, actually, where she said to me straight up, she's like, you know what, John, like, a lot of the times, like, I think you might be right when we're talking, but you're just so pushy on the issue. And you just have to get that last thing in there. And it seems to me like you have to be right. And I remember thinking when she was saying that to me, my initial nature was like, yeah, because I'm right. Like, you know, that's what I want to say. But then I thought about it. I was like, wow, my mom's telling me that I need to chill out. Like, and she recognizes the truth there, but me, the way I'm saying it is raising a roadblock to her accepting that truth.
Yeah, the idea is you want the person making the argument to think about what they're actually saying, and where the conclusion, whether the conclusion followed from the premises, they're being consistent.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then once the person gets thinking about it, that's when like really cool stuff starts happening.
It's almost like you're not convincing them. They're convincing themselves almost. Like,
right. Which you is might, so you might much
help
better.
Them a little bit.
Yeah.
Kind of point out a few questions here and there.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, how is A equal to B, right? That sort of question.
The Socratic method.
The Socratic, that's Socrates. He was so smart. He came up with something. Do you think he invented trains?
No. I don't.
See how quickly I can just jump right back? Yeah. No, the, but yeah, that's the, when you help people come to their own conclusions, it's so much more powerful too. Right. Because, well, you're helping somebody do the exact opposite of what somebody else did when they came up to that first conclusion that you're helping them move away from. Because mm-hmm. a lot of people, and I'm guilty of it too. I'm not just saying like it's just non-believers or anything. I'm guilty of this too. Sometimes I just believe stuff because, well, somebody told me. Somebody I trust. Like if Greg Kokel, so I work for Greg Kokel at Stand the Reason. If he tells me something, chances are I'm going to believe it. And not only that, but chances are I'll probably repeat it because I really respect Greg and I really respect his opinion. So if we're having a conversation about something and say he gives me a pointer on the problem of evil, right? He says, okay, you should enter this into your presentation to answer the question. I'm not going to spend, 100 hours researching it to make sure it's correct. You know, I'm going to have a conversation with him about it, and I trust him, and I'll probably tweak my conversation, my presentation about it. But then if somebody is listening to that might know a little bit more about the problem of evil, maybe it's their specialty or something like a Clay Jones, right? And he says, yeah, you know what? It's not quite right, and here's why, and let me help you understand that. Like, so I've bought into the fact that this is true because somebody I trust tells me that. It's not necessarily wrong, but sometimes people you trust misguide you.
So when you ask the question, how did you come to that conclusion, and they give you a really solid answer, do you have to be open to what they're telling you? I mean, could you potentially, I don't want to say the word backfire, but could it potentially change the way that you think?
Say that question again for me.
So suppose you're talking to somebody and you say, how did you come to that conclusion? Because you're really interested in how they came to this conclusion. And they give you a really solid answer
on
how they got to this conclusion.
Yeah.
And it's not, it's in conflict with your beliefs.
Yeah, sure. So it's a well-informed person. Who disagrees with you.
So you may actually learn something from what they're saying. In a positive light, or it may at least force you to think of it from a different perspective.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, definitely. When that happens, let's say somebody comes with a good answer, then that's a learning moment for you. And also, you could think about, like I said before, what Greg's talked about. Hey, maybe I need to, maybe I should ask this question. Think about what he said, and then maybe next time you could come back and come out with another question.
Yeah, or you alter your worldview. I mean, or like somebody's, if somebody has a better reason for believing something. So this is kind of like the next step, like the advanced step in Columbo where you get out of the hot seat. Where say you're having this great conversation with somebody, you're asking them about a piece of jewelry they're wearing, and they're explaining why they believe what they believe, and they have good reasons for it. And then how'd you come to that conclusion? It turns out, I studied this stuff for 15 years, and so I'm actually an expert in this. What I love about this the way that we're presenting this conversation to people is there's no pressure on us. Right. So now this is a great opportunity when you find, and this happens to me in the area of science all the time, because sometimes I talk to people who are straight up like, marine biologists, or they're smarter than me and they know this stuff better than I do. And so what I'll do is I'll just say, hey, wow, you seem to know so much more about this topic than I could ever know. Certainly right now. How about this? I'm going to take out a pen and a pad of paper, and will you go slow, and will you teach me what it is that you think is your view on why evolution is true, why on the, macro scale, why is it true? And number one, I gain credibility with the person I'm talking to because I'm not just like, number two, I'm also getting a free education. And these conversations have actually helped me understand evolution and then understand the Christian worldview even better, because I've been able to, and I've had to augment and change
how my Christianity, like how Christianity deals with the subject, but it's not a complete paradigm shift, right? Okay. So, right. And it's okay. Like, so the Bible tells us to test all things, right? Hold fast to that which is true. So, oftentimes the Christian, I feel like we shy away from challenges because, we're scared somehow somebody's going to disprove that God exists. And we need to shake that fear out of us. Like, there's no reason that we need to be scared. We can push into the hardest areas because God is real. He's true. And he's if he's not real, I don't want to believe in him. Like, I just don't, you know?
And also, like, if you don't have the answers, it's okay.
Yeah.
And ultimately, if you don't know, God knows. So you could, you know, rely on the fact that we believe in a God that knows all things.
Yeah.
That he created the world in a consistent manner. And I think that's one of the encouragement Greg also gives. I think it's like back of the book or something tactic. I don't remember, but it's more like we know that what God says is true. So even though we might hear the opposing side, there's nothing to be afraid of because we got the truth.
Yeah, we have the truth.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I love that, and I love the fact that through questions we can draw people out, and we don't have to be fearful of the answers we're going to get. Even if you're talking like, there have been a number of times when I've been sitting on the, I'm trying to think of the last time I was, I can't remember when it was. It was recently in the last 3 or 4 months. I was sitting on a plane from somewhere and I'm sitting next to a guy and I was wearing my, Wounded Warriors sweatshirt. So the guy asked me if I was military and I was like, no, I'm just a supporter. And he turns out that he's a Marine. So in my mind, I had, a total stereotypical Marine. He's a career Marine, never probably been to college. He's a military guy, right? It's probably smart, but like not specialized in intellectual affairs. Well, it turns out that he was in the Marine Corps, he's in Special Forces, retired, and he looked really, really young for his age. He was probably 55, but he looked maybe 40, super young. And we start talking and he's like, oh no, I went on to go get my master's in, you know, like some aerospace degree. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, and this guy turns out to be super brilliant. And we're in a faith conversation and he's very much like universalist, you know, like all roads lead to heaven. Like don't put your views as the truth. Everybody's got the truth. And it was really fun talking to him because we got into very technical conversations. Like I was way out of my league, but using these tactics, what do you mean by that? How'd you come to that conclusion? And then, whoa, let's slow down. Can you teach me about this? Number one, I learned a ton, not only about the subject matter, but about this man. We ended up talking about his family life, he was divorced and his divorce. And I ended up at the end, it was really cool. I didn't convince him of anything, but I definitely gave him some things to chew on. Some things, he gave me some things to think about. And at the end, I got to pray with him, you know, and I just said, can I just pray with you? I know we don't line up on this, but I'd love to just pray with you and pray for you. And he was like, yeah, absolutely. You know, and I got to pray with him in the name of Jesus, you know, and I got to pray for reconciliation with his wife. I got to pray. They had a kid together and the kid in the divorce got kind of is a little, you know, messed up trying to find his footing, and got to pray to the God of the universe who exists, you know, for his son. And I prayed that he would find the truth about God. And it was just it was a good conversation, as I guess what I'm saying through all this. I didn't have this idea sitting in the plane. When I get on that plane, I'm going to talk to the guy next to me about Jesus and I'm going to lead him to the Lord.
Right. So have you heard back from him?
No, I haven't.
So I think that's a great point. Cause I think, Greg brings up several times where he's talked to somebody and it's, you know, 5 minutes in his life.
Yep.
And that's it. He expects somebody else to go
garden
or eventually harvest.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess expects isn't the right word, but
he doesn't feel the pressure.
He doesn't feel the pressure of having to harvest that.
Yeah. And I think that that's probably one of the biggest things that we can take away from tactics. One is that, like, I mean, there are tactical ways to go about talking to people about your faith, ways that aren't they're cordial, they're winsome, and they're effective. But at the same time, for me, the main thing is there's no pressure. You take the pressure off of yourself, guys. When you're listening to this show, hear me right now that the pressure of conversion, you can't convert anything.
Right. Right.
You cannot raise anything from the dead. That is solely the work of God. And once we come to that understanding, I feel like we are much more willing to talk to somebody about our faith. We're much more willing to say, you know, hey, you know, let me tell you about this thing, or wow, you, I heard you say this. Can you explain that to me a little bit more? And how have you come to believe that? Can you help me understand where you're coming from?
Well, it's a little nerve wracking. At least for me, it's a little nerve wracking to come up to somebody and say, "Hey, I believe in Jesus. What do you believe in?" Right? but to actually go up and start a conversation like that, you know, just based on what they've talked about already with you, or what they're wearing, or whatever, you get to start a conversation, and you can then guide it with these questions. I think it's really good. I think the example you gave is really, really good. Also, for another reason, because you're talking to somebody who you're saying is someone way intellectually above you, but you're still able to have a very stimulating and interesting conversation with him.
Yeah, and you learn so much about people.
Yeah,
which for me is like really fun.
Yeah,
I was sitting next to, and this turned out that he turned out to be a Christian, but I was coming home from Dallas, and I'm sitting there. And I wanted to order a scotch. And the guy next to me across the aisle took the last scotch. He got two bottles of like little nips of scotch, right? And so I asked the woman for scotch, and she's like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. You know, I just gave out the last one." And the guy like poked his head around the flight attendant and said, "Hey, I got two. You can have one." I'm like, "No way." We started the conversation with him. And I totally, it's just like tactics is just ingrained in me because I've read it so many times, and this is just how I do it. And I just got into a conversation with him, not knowing where it was going to go, but being intentional with my time with him. And it turns out like he was a Christian, but it turned out that this guy, it was just such a cool thing. He's the world's largest exporter and processor of ginger. And like wait a second, what? Like and we just literally, we talked from Dallas to LA in the dead of night. We talked about his company that he owns and how he processes ginger, all the stuff that he's doing with ginger, how he harvests it, how he processes it, what he puts it in. He just went through, like, "Have you ever had the ginger gummies at Trader Joe's?" I'm like, "Yeah, my wife loves those." He's like, "Yeah, those are mine. Have you ever, you know, had this, like, do you have ginger ever with your sushi?" I was like, "Yeah, all the time. I love it." He's like, "There's probably like an 80% chance that's my ginger that you're having." Like, I was like, "Wait a second. Oh my gosh." And he was like a multimillionaire, and he got bumped back into, you know, with the commoners with us. Because anyways, he missed a flight and he needed to get to another flight to Hong Kong. And I just had the best conversation with him. We talked about his family, and he had four kids, and he's married, and he's been married for like 50 years. And like, he was just a great guy. You know,
when did you mention Jesus in that conversation?
Actually, I did mention Jesus, okay. But actually I think it was him that brought, he asked me what I did, you know? And then I love that when people say, and then I just told him, "Yeah, I'm a Christian. And I speak and I write and I do some of this stuff, like Christian apologetics. Have you ever heard of that?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, like I'm a Christian." He's like, "Actually, I just founded a church in, oh gosh, where was he from? I forget, a South American country. And wherever they harvest the ginger, he built like a whole, like not village, but like compound for the people that are working there with a school and everything for their families. And he said he just built a church because he believes that, you know, he believes in Jesus and he believes that, you know, in the one true way. And he believes in the triune God and stuff." And I asked him all those questions and stuff. We just had a great question. So the point is that I just had a great conversation with another human being.
Well, that's what
my backfired there.
So, well, what I was trying to say was, you just have to have a conversation with people. You don't have to feel the pressure of bringing the gospel in. You know, I'm going to work the gospel in, you know, 2 minutes into my conversation.
Yeah.
And try to make him believe. You remove that pressure, and it's amazing what kind of conversations you can have with people.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, you know. And that's a guy I hear back from. We exchanged business cards. I sent him an email. He followed up, and we've been emailing back and forth. And I'm trying to weasel my way into a trip to wherever it is. I can't remember the country he's from.
Can you give me some free gummies?
Free gummies. Yeah. He actually, it's crazy because he was transporting gummies, and the way he does it is it's like out of a movie. Like he had these frozen gummies in a cooler. And he was just like, "Hey, do you want?" And he gave me a super fresh, well, it was frozen, but frozen gummy. He's like, "Let it thaw out and then eat it." And it was delicious. But he was bringing him in for, he was turning it into the FDA for approval or something, for something new that they're doing, some new processing technique. And I was just like, this is like, oh my gosh, like whoever would think that you would be able, I mean, the people that you meet on planes and trains.
You can become... You can become a test subject.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah. The FDA is going to call you in a couple of weeks. How you feeling?
I feel like ginger. Yeah. So how's that last batch of ginger treating you? You know, and but you get to talking to cool people. And the idea is that you don't have this burden on you. And just through a set of simple questions, and we only had an hour to talk about this stuff. If you guys listening, please buy the book Tactics by Gregory Kokel, Tactics. And then his other book is The Story of Reality. Two of the best books I've ever read. And you will not regret it. And you can go to str.org or you can go to amazon.com. In order those things. But wow, this second half really flew by.
Yeah, it always does.
It's a must have for any budding apologist.
Those are must have books, yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. That's Chang.
Well, I haven't read The Story of Reality, but definitely The Tactics.
You should read it. It's really good. But Tactics for sure. And that's the music. That means we're done. That means somebody else is going to come on after us. Yeah, they're going to take good care of you guys, though. Yeah. So my name's John. I'm here with Chang and Eric, and this is apologetics.com radio, where we challenge believers to think and thinkers to believe. And we'll be with you next week. And until then, have a great week, and give them heaven, as Coco would say. Talk to you later. Oh, Lord, have mercy.